Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
For those who heard that, the volley of gunshots in the dead of night 1 week ago, it will be hard to forget. It has been a week since the manhunt for the Boston Marathon bombing suspects led to the shootout on the streets of Watertown. WBUR's team covered the events as they unfolded, and this morning, our reporters remind us of the final hours.
Right now, push those units, push that ALS unit off the town.
I'm Fred Bever. It's 10:28 Thursday night. The Boston police scanner reports an officer down on the MIT campus in Cambridge. The call for an ambulance goes out. Police cars rush to the intersection of Vassar and Main. There are just a few bystanders.
Right as we approached the neighborhood, three ambulances were leaving the scene with a police escort.
Within a few minutes of the incident, they were heading back the other way over the Longfellow Bridge towards Mass General.
We did hear from people around us there was an active shooter.
Stand by, sir. We have nothing further on the officer or his condition at this time.
Soon after arriving at Mass General, MIT police officer Sean Collier is pronounced dead.
I'm Bruce Gellerman. Across the river on Brighton Avenue in Austin, a 2013 black Mercedes SUV is hijacked. The driver taken hostage. It's around 11 p.m. The carjacker tells the hostage that he's responsible for the marathon bombings and shows his gun. I'm serious, he says. Back in Cambridge, police can't find Collier's killer. At some point in the next hour, the carjacker picks up an accomplice who loads something into the SUV and jumps into the backseat. They head to the Shell station at River Street and Memorial Drive. The hostage escapes while they're pumping gas, leaving a cell phone in the car.
All units, stay clear of the radio at the moment. 465 Watertown, 468.
In Watertown, police officer Joe Reynolds is the first to spot the SUV. Police ping the hostage's cell phone, pinpointing the Mercedes at 89 Dexter Avenue. It turns onto Laurel Street. Two cruisers block the way and throw spotlights on the street. From inside his home, Andrew Kitzenberg snaps pictures of a second car, a green sedan, in the middle of Laurel Street. In a retelling on his company website, he says the suspects get supplies from that car.
Shot fired on units, respond.
At about 12:46 a.m., a firefight erupts. The noise shakes the neighborhood.
All you hear is that pop, 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 pop. And then like a gun battle going back and forth. Pop, pop, pop.
That's Watertown resident Sean Bertulli.
There's actually two gun battles.
And those battles happen right outside Michael Doucette's house. Transit police officer Richard Donahue Jr. is shot and injured in the driveway next door. And Doucette says the younger of the two suspects gets into a shootout in a side yard.
He ran out of bullets and then pulled a bomb out and threw it at the cop. It exploded in the air.
Like, we heard the boom!
Loud explosion! Loud explosion!
Doucette says the younger suspect uses that explosion as cover to get closer to the SUV as his accomplice advances on the police.
He was walking right towards the cop shooting and throwing grenades or pipe bombs.
Watertown Sergeant John McClellan stands his ground. Out of bullets, he tackles the man. The younger suspect gets behind the wheel of the SUV and floors it.
The cops jumped. He ran over his brother, dragged him about 30 feet. His body stopped right here in front of my driveway. And they continued to shoot at the SUV as it drove by. And it really looked like the brother sacrificed himself so the younger one could get away.
Bullets are still flying as the SUV heads up Spruce Street. Michael Holtz's house is in the line of fire.
And I bounced off my tenant's TV. They were watching TV. They heard a ping, and they looked. There's a big gape in the wall. Good thing anyone hurt.
The suspect ditches the car at Spruce and Lincoln Streets. For the next 12 and a half hours, Watertown is locked down. Police bring in dogs, bomb detection equipment, and more manpower. The media arrive on Mass 2.
Everyone get back! Get back!
Down that street! 100 yards right now, Bruce! Down that street! 100 yards!
Police detain a man for a couple of hours, then clear and release him. The house-to-house search continues into daylight, with occasional surges of highly armed SWAT teams, guns drawn, on residential buildings. But nothing. The suspects are identified as Tamerlan Tsarnaev, now dead, and his younger brother Jahar, on the loose, considered armed and very dangerous. A tense waiting period wears on through the afternoon. 6.05 p.m., in a briefing at the Watertown Mall on Arsenal Street, Governor Deval Patrick lifts the lockdown.
In light of the status of the investigation here in Watertown and the developments in the course of the day, the stay-indoors request is lifted.
The press conference ends. Soon after, a Franklin Street resident ventures into his backyard and finds Jahar Tsarnaev, bloodied, hiding in a boat. The resident calls 911. WBUR's Kurt Nickish is at the police staging area.
Everybody was uncertain what was going to happen next. All of a sudden, I heard cruisers speeding west on Arsenal Street. There was an armored vehicle that came up from Lee around the corner. Black, boxy vehicle. It had SWAT team members hanging off the side, and it turned onto Arsenal and just went straight west. And within a minute, it seems like, there was a helicopter hovering over one spot about half mile west, which we now know to be Franklin Street.
Police converge on the boat. Neighbors hear flashbangs, and officers plead for Tsarnaev to come out, shouting, "It doesn't have to end this way. It doesn't have to end this way."
About 8:42, Tsarnaev is in custody. It ends.
This report was produced by WBUR's Fred Bever, Bruce Gellerman, George Hicks, and Kurt Nickish, with contributions from WBUR's John Peck, Kevin Sullivan, and Fred Tice.